Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte's bid for the 2020 Republican National Convention was bookended last week by two votes, one contentious at the city council, the other unanimous.
The ayes have it. The motion is adopted. And Charlotte, North Carolina will be the site of the 2020 Republican National Convention. Congratulations, Charlotte.
On Friday, the Republican National Committee closed out its summer meeting in Austin, Texas, by awarding its next presidential convention to Charlotte, capping a bid that saw few real competitors. Ron Kaufman chairs the committee that scouted potential 2020 host cities.
From the first day we met with the leaders of Charlotte, the entire site selection committee was impressed not only with the city, the hotels, the arena, the venue, the airport, and the citizens, but mostly by the leadership, passion, and professionalism of the leaders of the Queen City. The more time we spent in the city, the clearer it became that this growing, dynamic city was a perfect setting for a host a successful convention in 2020.
The decision to award the convention to Charlotte closed out a week that began with the city council nearly rejecting further pursuit of it. Charlotte will now be one of only 11 cities that have hosted both the Republican and the Democratic conventions. But before the delegates, the politicians, the media from around the globe make their way here in the summer of 2020, there's a lot of work to do, not the least of which is raising $70 million to pull this off. Here to talk about the next steps are some people who've been through this before. Bob Morgan is president and CEO of the Charlotte Chamber. He helped roll out the red carpet when the Democrats threw their party here in 2012, and he now serves on the host committee for the 2020 convention. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning. To be with you.
Tom Murray is CEO of the Charlotte Regional Visitors Authority, which, alongside Mayor Vi Lyles, helped lead the convention push. Good morning to you. Welcome back.
Good morning.
And Dockery Clark is a longtime Charlotte marketing executive who served as chief of staff for the host committee behind the Charlotte 2012 Democratic Convention. I hope you've dusted off the cobwebs to talk about this.
I've tried my best, but thank you for having me, Mike.
You're very welcome. Nice to have you here. And also in our Spirit Square studio is Sarah Reedy Jones. She's vice chair of the Mecklenburg County Republican Party. She was part of the contingent that traveled to Austin last week to be on hand for the convention decision. I saw you smiling when we were playing audio from that. That must have made you very excited.
It's hard not to still be emotional about that. That's a very exciting day for Republicans and for the whole community.
What was it like when they made that? I mean, did you know before they made the announcement? Were you pretty certain?
You know, it's the world's greatest secret that's not really a secret, right? But it's still, until it's finalized and inked, you just wait for it to happen.
So when they make the announcement, you actually do feel the adrenaline.
Absolutely. We joked while we were waiting around for a site selection committee, it was like waiting for the Pope's smoke signals. So just get out of that room.
So Tom Murray, you're the one who brought up the fact that a few cities can boast holding both conventions, both Republican and the Democratic convention. And that list of cities includes Miami and New York City and San Francisco, and there are a few others in there too. So no matter how much how much of a booster you are, we're not in that league. So how did that happen? How did this happen?
Well, I don't actually consider myself a booster. I run the Visitors Authority in town, and we run lots of venues that the city owns, and we market the city for tourism and help manage a $6.7 billion industry. It's a huge industry within Charlotte, and so it's important to us. You know, 1 in 9 people in our community work in this industry, so it's important to us that we continue to bring events like this to our city to support those jobs.
But you didn't answer my question. So if we're not in New York City's league, we're not even in Miami Beach's league, I don't think, because they have the ocean. We don't have the ocean. So how did we snag both conventions? What is it about Charlotte?
I think, you know, we, first of all, on the second convention, we had the proof of the fact that we did it in the previous year in 2012. We also have been a city that's been growing dramatically since then, and so they saw that we were even stronger than we were back then. But clearly, we put our best foot forward. We have a strong team at the CRVA that did the RFP response and did a really exceptional job at it. We had a mayor that supported the event coming here, and we had a team of experienced people on the staff at the, in the city in the city management. And so we felt like we had a great chance to win it, and win it we did.
So, Sarah, you have the inside track as a Republican and a member of the Republican Party here in Mecklenburg County. What do you think tipped the scales?
I think it's the fact that we did have this big bipartisan support. I think having the mayor and having those council members come on board and support this. And I think, frankly, the fact that we did host it, like he said, in 2012, and being able to show that comparison and what's worked and what didn't work and how much more Charlotte has grown since then.
How much of it had to do you think, with the fact that we had an active push in Charlotte from the mayor through the Convention and Visitors Authority and Las Vegas? The city wasn't involved. Only the people who run the convention center were involved out there, and there were very few other cities that really threw their hat into the ring. How much of that was the reason for our getting it?
Well, there is a misconception on that, and I'm sure CRVA could probably talk about why the RFP process changed the way that it did and that there was an active interest in hosting the convention. But I think that the word on the ground is so many people were paying attention to see how actively we pursued this and how actively we pushed this and how wonderful, how many people across the country were glued into the hearings with the city council and just knowing that we were really working across the aisle to get this pushed.
So when Tariq Bakari, the city councilman, was on here, he said that there were seven or eight cities involved at one point in pitching this. And then I've read news reports that say to the contrary is true, that not many people really, when they got right down to it, didn't want it. They backed away from it. What is the truth?
The reality is that they did change the process on how to bid on that before.
They being the Republican National Committee?
Being the Republican National Committee, there was a process before where they would really kind of do the site selection tours and wine and dine and do all that. But they really wanted to make it more of a business process and see who had the infrastructure in place, who had all the important components to do that. And so they really whittled it down that way versus the opposite way in the past.
So what do we got that they don't have? What is
it? Apparently it was the Krispy Kreme donuts, the best $51 we ever spent. So
really?
But it was just showing that we have the growing city, the growing hotel numbers, the support of groups like CRVA, the support of our facilities.
Although Mayor Lyles kind of pushed this from the very beginning and never wavered in her support to bring this convention here, I'm told, Tom, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that the CRVA really does all the nuts and bolts work on this. Once the mayor said go, you did it. You went and you put it all together and you made the package happen. What went into that? What's that process like?
Well, our team takes the lead, but there are lots of people involved in having to make this bid. There's hundreds of hotels. There's dozens and dozens of venues. There's the city staff. There's police, fire. All of those folks are part of the component of a very complex RFP.
But we don't
response.
Even know the date of this convention yet. So how can you talk to hoteliers and restaurants and people like that if they don't even know what the week is to say, yeah, we have rooms?
So we know that it'll be one of two dates. And so every venue or hotels hold both spaces until the date's announced. So it's an easy process for us. It also works well for the RNC.
So Charlotte, Bob, pitched the Democrats in 2010 for the 2012 convention, and I'm imagining that you were involved in that process. Were you involved in this one? You're a member of the host committee.
Well, of course, the CRVA, as you just mentioned, takes the lead on these. And I want to say, look, leadership matters. It started with U.S. Senator Tom Tillis and Mayor Lyles, but then the work of the CRVA, Tom makes it sound easy. He just said it's easy to do. The work that they do pulling events together like this, it's an incredible team in an effort that they have. You know, I think in addition to the other items that have been mentioned, when you think back to the media and the members of the delegates and others who were here in 2012, repeatedly they talked about Charlotte's compactness. And in meeting with the site selection committee a month or two ago, not all cities offer a collection of venues and hotels in which you can literally walk from one to another. They had come here in 2012 from Tampa, and they wanted to talk about how they would have to have a car and a driver, and it would take them hours in traffic to get around from one venue to another. In Charlotte, you come in from the airport, you don't need a car, you get into your hotel, and you can walk to the convention center. If you're the media, you can walk to the arena. If you're one of the delegates, all of the parties and other events that are taking place. Compactness and cleanliness of your uptown. People, I don't know that they, the ones that haven't been here before, have an expectation that's different than the reality, and it makes a great impression, and the Republicans want to have a great week and a great party and do their business, and Charlotte works.
We had all that compactness that you're talking about in 2012 here in the Charlotte for the Charlotte Convention, and we had great weather for the Charlotte Convention. Tampa was on the verge of a hurricane or something when they had their convention, the Republican convention there in Tampa. But Tampa looked like a fortress. It was locked down. Charlotte was locked down, but it didn't look that way, didn't feel that way. Did they comment on that?
Well, again, it's the compactness, right? You have the perimeter wall that gets put around the arena, but it did not include the convention center, for example, or the square. And so you could move around, and you didn't have to get in a car to go everywhere. And fast forward now from 2012 to 2020, yes, we did have people who were staying in hotels in the surrounding areas. We'll have that again. But, Tom, how many more hotel rooms do we have just in the center city? So even more people will be able to participate from that.
So Tom may not identify himself as a booster. You certainly are, as the president of the Chamber of Commerce.
Guilty.
Okay.
Guilty.
What does it say about Charlotte that we're one of the few cities that have hosted both parties' conventions?
Well, it sends a message to Tom's prospective customers that Charlotte can handle your event. So book your next meeting, book your next convention here. From the Chamber's perspective, a little bit more broadly, there will be thousands of people that have never been to Charlotte before who will come. They will walk away with a favorable impression. We have had, since 2012, over 40 ambassadors from around the world find their way to Charlotte. A lot of that goes back to the 350 representatives of foreign governments who were here as part of the convention to observe in 2012, who we were very intentional. We hosted them. We toured them around the community. Mm-hmm. They went back and told their government, there are things happening in Charlotte. You need to go get familiar with it. So it's an incredible opportunity for exposure to tell the story, and that will generate additional interest in Charlotte and business down the road.
Dockery Clark is here. She's the former chief of staff of the Democratic National Convention when it was here in 2012. I didn't know convention had chiefs of staff, but congratulations for that. I have to ask you, I'm sure that the Democrats were equally, Democrats in Mecklenburg County were equally excited about their convention coming to Charlotte in 2012 as Sarah is for the Republican convention coming here in 2 years. Does the excitement match the reality?
Well, of course. I mean, it's a chance to really showcase everything that Charlotte has to offer. Bob mentioned delegate parties. We held them specifically at 10 to 12 different venues so we could showcase every single one of our wonderful venues that we have to offer and that Tom's involved with showcasing every single day that he comes through. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of work. I'm not going to kid you. And it takes focus, the old adage. And you got to plan the work and work the plan and watch the budget and pay attention to details because the devil's in the details just at any major event that you do.
From what you know about why the Republicans chose Charlotte, how closely does it match why the Democrats chose Charlotte in 2010 for the 2012 convention?
Well, to Bob's earlier point, our uptown is a competitive advantage. There's no question about that. It's ease of execution for everyone involved. And so I wasn't involved in the actual bid process for either, but I can tell you that having heard what we heard after Philadelphia and some other feedback that we got on other cities that have hosted, people love the fact that we had that ease of execution.
Dockery Clark is the former chief of staff of the 2012 Democratic National Convention. She's here with Sarah Reedy Jones, the vice chair of the Mecklenburg Republican Party. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the impending arrival, moments from now, of the Republican National Convention. Actually, it's 2 weeks away, or 2 years away, rather, but just last week they told us that we were going to be the site for it, and that is why Sarah Reedy Jones is here. She's the vice chair of the Mecklenburg County Republican Party, Dockery Clark, former chief of staff of the 2012 Democratic Convention when it was held here in Charlotte, Bob Morgan, president and CEO of the Charlotte Chamber, and Tom Murray, CEO of CRVA, that's the Charlotte Regional Visitors Authority. Take us back to 2012, Bob and Tom. What was the economic impact of the Democratic Convention coming to town? Tom?
So the economic impact was around $163 million. So that seems to be about what you would expect in Cleveland. In 2016, it was $188 million. So those are big events, actually the biggest event we have ever hosted in Charlotte. So we're excited about hosting another one of that size.
So what sectors benefited the most? Obviously the hotels and the restaurants and the taxi cabs, but other than that, what sectors benefited?
Yeah, certainly the venues, the meeting planners, small businesses, lots of local businesses benefit as well. In fact, the Republicans have committed to doing that as well, and so we're excited about local people participating and hosting these visitors.
And if you listened last week to the debate at the city council from people who were in favor of bringing this convention to town, you heard a lot of talk about the economic benefit, and you got the impression that they were expecting a windfall from this convention being in Charlotte. Are those realistic expectations? Is that how you would describe what happened to those folks when the Democrats came to town?
So I think the most important windfall is what it does to the people who work in the hospitality industry. And during the 2012 convention, $58 million in wage income was dispersed, so $58.5 million. So that's a big deal. But as the Cleveland Authority released in their report, there were 10 billion impressions made of the city. And that changed the way people viewed their city, as we think it did when we hosted the DNC. They actually put in their report that they nearly doubled the amount of lead generation that they had prior to the convention for their convention center. And so I think that helps all cities grow in their awareness, and their perception changed dramatically as well.
10 billion?
10 billion impressions.
Where does that come from? Television?
Well, there's 15,000 journalists that show up here, and there's every major network, and they are constantly putting out their messages, and those two reasons, the people that work in the industry and the way that it changes the perception in a positive way
for
the community that hosted.
I remember thinking while we were covering the convention in the daytime, but then I was watching it on television at night, and I remember being disappointed in the fact that the TV cameras were always in the convention hall. They didn't show the city a lot. It wasn't like the NFL with the blimp and cameras on the street.
But Mike, let me jump in, because I remember either Tuesday or Wednesday of that week, at about 10 o'clock in the morning, Mayor Fox was on CNBC.
Right.
Frank Emery, the chair of the chamber, was over on Fox Business News. Mm-hmm. I was doing C-SPAN at the same time. This was live television, free advertising, free exposure for our city. And we got a little bit lucky in 2012, if you think about it. The convention itself was rather boring. Mm-hmm. It was the renomination of an incumbent president. There wasn't a lot of action that people were focused on. And so the opportunity to talk about Charlotte's new economy, we were able to serve that up in pretty dramatic ways that you really can't buy that kind of exposure.
Might have been boring to you, but I'm going to wager that for the Democrats, bringing the sitting president to the convention hall was not boring.
Very exciting, I must admit. So it met all of our expectations in terms of that, and allowed us to showcase a lot. But if you'll remember, we also cut the convention down from 3 days to 4 days to three.
Right.
And we had the community celebration on that Monday.
Right.
And so we gave many, many people in this community the opportunity to participate. And we wanted it to be the most inclusive convention ever. So people felt that way, and they felt ownership of it. And they volunteered. The women's group that we created, DIVA is what they were called, they live on today. And they donated something like 4,600 hours of volunteer hours. So it made a difference in this community, inside and out of that arena. But, of course, it was exciting to me.
And, Sarah, you too, the Republicans too, are bringing the sitting president to Charlotte, whoever that president may be.
Absolutely.
And he is the presumptive nominee. One would assume that President Trump will be the nominee of the party. What does that do? I mean, it's not like bringing a even candidates for president have Secret Service, but not like the president has Secret Service. What does that mean for you and the Republicans and security and all that?
That means that people that know much more about that will be handling things like that. But what that means is that brings that excitement. I mean, for any political convention, you know, I'm a political geek. I love this stuff. I got to be an alternate delegate in 2008, back when young people didn't support John McCain. So I got to sit on the front row of the convention because they're like, you are a young female that looks about 12 years old. Get out there and support John McCain. So it's an excitement, though, that we're seeing that regardless of your personal thoughts on President Trump, he is bringing out a whole new group of people, a whole new group of supporters, and just trying to tap into that.
Will
excitement.
Your convention be 4 days or 3 days? Do you know yet?
I would assume it would be 4 days. The convention usually stays on a similar track.
So you mentioned that the Democratic convention's economic impact was around $164 million. And according to an article in the Charlotte Observer, that pales in comparison to the region's $164 billion GDP in 2016. And studies have shown that there is no discernible impact on employment, personal income, or personal income per capita in cities where conventions are held or were held from 1970 through 2005. Do you think that figure is right? And or should we be looking at these conventions and events like these rather than through an economic lens, through a PR and marketing lens?
So I don't agree with the studies, but I also know from hands-on what it does personally to the people that work in this community. I know what it means to fill up hotels and what it means to the housekeepers that clean those rooms. I know what it means to the restaurant waiters and waitresses, the people in the dishwasher area. They want this kind of activity to help them make the income that they use to support their families. So I don't think that study is right. We have lots of studies say that that's wrong. And we use the country's most respected economic impact organization to do the studies, the same as the Cleveland did as well. And that's not what they say. So I'm comfortable that that this is worth it for our community.
We've been on a building tear in Charlotte since 2012. How many more hotel rooms will we have in 2020 in the downtown core than we had in 2012? Do you know the answer to that question?
I know the answer. It's a phenomenal answer. I mean, we'll have 66% more inventory than we had before. So we'll have about 7,300 rooms opened up versus some 4,600 that we had back in 2012.
So what will that mean for delegates, and what will it mean for media, and what will it mean for people who live here in terms of traffic and congestion and being able to come to work downtown when the convention is underway?
So, you know, I think we'll be able to house more people and within that, you know, unique walkable downtown core that we have that so many people want to be part of, and I think that's great. But we'll be out still in 100 hotels, most of which are outside of the urban core. So
yeah, a lot of people had to be bussed in for the Democratic convention from their hotels, which were outside the core. How much of a difference will the Lynx Blue Line, which now goes out to the university, make? Will it make a significant difference? Did it make a difference in the negotiations? Was that a selling point for the convention?
Sure. I think we're real excited about having that investment. We think that will help the folks, particularly up in the University City area. And those hotels feel like they're part of the Uptown Core. I think that's exciting for us. But clearly, any transportation modes that we have that will help people get here easier will be helpful.
Will the train be able to run through the center of town during the convention?
We're still trying to figure that out with the security experts, but we think that it may have to stop at both points and go back the other direction, not run through the convention center.
So, Sarah, we are a city of blue in a sea of red,
yes.
An island of blue in a sea of red. And we heard the very close decision that city council made, and we heard all of the naysayers who said no to the Republican convention and all their reasons why. But in that sea of red outside of the city of Charlotte, there must be people who are unable to contain themselves because of their excitement about this. What has been the reaction from around Mecklenburg County outside of Charlotte and around the region outside of Mecklenburg County?
Well, the reality first is that we are a polarized nation, so the fact that it was a 6-5 vote, but you have to remember it is 9-2 on the council, so the fact that it was a 6-5 vote shows that there was strength in that. You're seeing we have that red Republican donut around Charlotte. Charlotte itself has about 100,000 Republicans. Mecklenburg County has over 175,000 Republicans, and then you count the surrounding North Carolina counties, that's over 375,000 Republicans. So there is an excitement here. North Carolina does vote red on a lot of things. So you're going to find that you're going to attract those people that maybe I've been saying kind of come out of that conservative closet here in the Charlotte area. But you do have a lot of interest all around the entire region. I know people in South Carolina have been reaching out, you know, wanting to get involved.
There are lots of reasons political parties choose particular cities for their conventions. And one of them I've always read is that because they hope if they're in a swing state, the presence of their candidate will put that state solidly in their pocket. When Barack Obama came here in 2012, he didn't win North Carolina. When Mitt Romney went to Florida in 2012, he didn't win Florida. What are your hopes for Donald Trump and North Carolina and the presence of Donald Trump and the convention in Charlotte?
Well, my hope is that whoever the Republican nominee is, that obviously this is a boost for that. I know I witnessed that going up to Minneapolis. I mean, John McCain didn't win Minnesota that year. But the reality is that this is just a chance to showcase our city and showcase the efforts that we have and hopefully put a positive light on Republicans and show that we want a lot of the same things that the Democrats do in our city.
And so, Dockery, we are a Democratic city in a Republican state, or pretty much a Republican state. Charlotte City Council's vote was very close. It was 6-5. There were a lot of naysayers who had a lot of things to say about why we shouldn't bring the convention here. The mayor never wavered in her support to bring it. Did we do the right thing from a Democrat's point of view? Did we do the right thing by inviting the convention?
Oh, I absolutely think we did. And Vi was part of the 2012 convention, so she knows firsthand what it can do to benefit this city. And we want to show that we can continue to be on the level of par level that you suggested earlier. Some of the bigger cities that hosted this. Both conventions or two conventions within a short period of time. So I absolutely believe it's the right thing to do for the city and the fact that we can showcase all that we have to offer.
Tom.
You mentioned a lot of naysayers, but I got to also say there were a lot of people that were for us hosting
sure.
it in the audience. In fact, there were more people
yes,
in the
were.
Audience that spoke for us hosting the convention than those that voted against.
So when the mayor was on this program last week, I asked her, because she never wavered as being the point person. I said, are you going to speak at the convention? Are you going to change your mind? And she said, no. And I said, why not? And she said, because I'm a Democrat. Well, there have been people from opposite parties, mayors of cities that hosted the opposite party's convention who spoke at the convention just to say, it's nice to have you here, have a good time. Should she speak at the convention?
Well, I think it's up to Vi and what she wants to do, but I'm not going to suggest that she needs to go there, but she's done a lot. She's done yeoman service to help bring this convention to Charlotte that will bring all the economic impact that we've discussed. So she can send a broad welcome from her couch if she wants to, but she's done her share.
Would she be welcome?
Absolutely. We have been so appreciative of the efforts that she has put into hosting this and into making sure that we receive this bid. The reality is that convention is 2 years down the road. A lot can change
lot can
in
change.
2 years.
So what was the impact of the 6-5 vote and the fact that it wasn't rah-rah, sis, boom-bah? There was a lot of people saying, we shouldn't do this. What was the impact on the Republican side of the scale to that?
I think when you started to explain that it is 9-2, I mean, people really went, wow, there is some support. And I think the fact that, like Tom had mentioned that at that hearing, that there were more people in support of that than against hosting the convention, and for such a broad variety of reasons of why they wanted the convention, that really sold people.
Bob, you're on the host committee. Are all the members of the host committee Republicans?
Oh, I don't believe so. I'm unaffiliated myself.
Okay.
I think there's some folks who were involved in the effort in 2012 who are a part of it. Mike, the 6-5 vote, I'd like to comment on that. The risk that we ran is that vote was so late in the process. It was after the Republicans had decided Charlotte was their mm-hmm. preference. Had we rejected it at that point, there was the real risk of of further alienation with the Republicans who are in control in the legislature in Raleigh, the federal government, certainly. And so I think, you know, had
any other entity that might want to come here that needs the blessing of city council, if we rejected this at the last minute, that could send a bad signal for other events, not political events.
We were at the altar.
Yeah.
And so the timing was such that it would have been very unfortunate to have pulled back at that point. And I would agree, when you sit back and think of a 9-2 council that you get the support of the mayor and four Democrats, that's pretty impressive.
So we have 2 years to get ready for this. What has to be done? Sarah and Bob, I'm going to ask you this question. And Tom, if you want to jump in here too.
Sure.
What has to happen in the next 2 years?
Well, from our end, we need to recruit at least 5,000 volunteers. Mayor Lyles personally told me it took 12,000, so now the game is really on to get that many volunteers. But that's what we'll be providing, whatever support that...
What do those volunteers do?
A little bit of everything. The reality is that none of us are going to be holding hands with the president and walking across the stage. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to temper those expectations. You know, it's just a variety of activities.
Go ahead.
Well, we had folks who did things like NDI, Madeleine Albright's organization that came in and did a speaker series over here at the Blumenthal. We had to staff that. We have to staff the welcome stations that certainly Tom and his team put up. You staff there's all sorts of different things, to your point. We're not all on the stage walking the president out to speak. So there are any number of things, events galore throughout the city. Anything else, Bob?
Well, John Lasseter, the newly appointed CEO of the host committee, is not with us. John has a to-do list of 70 million items he has to raise $70 million and put together the staff team. Dockery was a part of 20 or 30 people who made up the host committee staff
right. In
2012. There'll be a similar effort. So resumes are flying. The fundraising has begun. From the chamber's perspective, we'll be working with Tom and his team, the Center City Partners, the Charlotte Regional Partnership. How do we maximize the positive exposure potential with an event like this?
John Lasseter, you mentioned, is now president and CEO of Charlotte in 2020. Is that the host committee's official title? Is that what that is? Or
it
is that something else? And he has three co-chairs, Walter Price, who heads public affairs at Moore & Van Allen. That's a law firm. Ned Curran, who is CEO emeritus at Northwood Office, which I think runs Valentine. And the Lending Tree CEO, Doug Lebda, is one of those co-chair people. It is their job to raise the $70 million. Is that right? That's what they're set to do?
That's correct.
What do the Democrats have to raise?
Well, we had to raise $35 million for the execution of the Spectrum Center.
Why is this so much more? It's twice as expensive. Inflation hasn't gone up twice as much. Why is it so much more expensive to bring Republicans to town?
I don't know why you're looking at me. I guess you assume that Republicans just we're a little more high maintenance, I guess. But the reality is, it's the growing cost of conventions, and
we have to take a break. I have to let Tom Murray go to the CRVA because he has a meeting to go to. When we come back, we'll talk to somebody from the Cleveland Plain Dealer about their experience 2 years ago. I'm Mike Collins. For a sexual assault survivor, speaking up about abuse can be daunting. Many never come forward. And for those that do, finding a resolution can be a winding and frustrating road. Charlotte Talks is hosting a special public conversation in partnership with WFAE's podcast, She Says. Join us Thursday evening, August 2nd at 7 at McGlowan Theater in Uptown for Beyond, She Says, Sexual Assault in Charlotte. Registration at WFAE.org. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte will not be the first blue city to host Republicans, but we will be the second Democratic enclave in a row to do so. In 2016, Cleveland was chosen as the host city at a time when it was solidly Democratic with no elected Republicans on their city council. Still, the GOP chose them to host the convention that nominated Donald Trump for his first term. And we wanted to see how that city made out and if we could learn from any pluses or minuses they encountered. So we invited Andrew Tobias to join us. He is a political reporter for their newspaper out there, the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Looking back, was hosting the Republican National Convention in 2016 a good thing for Cleveland?
I think that it actually was. There's always this debate about whether mega events have the economic benefits that people sort of trumpet. But I think with Cleveland, we were fortunate to have a really kind of perfect narrative for, as far as, I guess, rather what I'm trying to say is, had high narrative potential for people to come in and see this Rust Belt city finally kind of reinventing itself. And it happened that our basketball team was doing really well and won the championship. So just all of the publicity that we got, it's difficult to recreate that. And the event itself didn't go badly. So I don't think it was like this silver bullet that just kind of suddenly changed the direction of the city. But I do think it was ultimately a good thing.
So some of the same metrics we've been talking about here, civic pride, good marketing to the rest of the world as they watch conventions go on in Cleveland, et cetera. But the economic impact, I'm told, was $110 million spent in Cleveland with $188.4 million re-spent. That would be the total economic impact. I'm not sure what those figures mean, but it sounds pretty impressive. How much did your local committee, your host committee, have to raise in advance of the convention?
Well, I was listening to you guys. It sounds like Charlotte is on the hook for $70 million. The number for us was around $64 million. And, you know, honestly, one of the big challenges of that particular convention was how controversial things got. There's always this kind of expectation that there's going to be sort of partisan stuff that sort of cooked into the challenges of organizing something like that. But Donald Trump was uniquely controversial. And so you saw this pressure campaign that was deployed against a lot of the corporate sponsors of the 2012 Republican National Convention that was successful in actually getting companies like Coca-Cola and FedEx and other sort of like Fortune 500 type companies to completely just bow out. And then you also had the Koch brothers, who were big Republican donors, basically say that they weren't going to participate. So fundraising was not easy. And we even went into the last week of the convention not being sure if we're going to hit the target or not.
Yeah, because Wells Fargo dropped out, UPS dropped out, Motorola dropped out, JP Morgan Chase said no, Ford Motor Company refused to sponsor the convention. And yet you were still able to raise the $63 million, I think you said it was. You were still able to do that?
Yeah, as it turned out, Sheldon Adelson, who's a big Republican donor, ended up kind of helping close the gap at the very end. And then some other companies with an Ohio presence sort of stepped up and basically helped them close out their books. But it was hairy for sure.
And the host committee out in Cleveland did an economic impact study, but so did Cleveland State University. And the two reports were different. I think Cleveland State's report had a more muted outlook on what the actual economic impact was. How far were those two estimates off, and why? Why don't we know the real figure?
Well, so the host committee actually booked both of those studies, and I'm not entirely sure about, I mean, so we might suspect that the one didn't kind of present the numbers that they were hoping for, so they went to try to find another study to perform, you know, numbers that were kind of more in line with what their expectations were. But, you know, it's been a while, so I'm really not exactly sure what the methodological differences were there, but they obviously were further apart, and I think it kind of speaks to a lot of these events sometimes tend to not kind of live up to their billing when it comes to just sort of the sheer dollars that they raised.
Prior to Charlotte hosting the 2012 Democratic Convention, there were concerns about trouble, protesters, etc. It didn't materialize, either because, because the protesters didn't materialize, but also because our police department was highly trained and handled them with kid gloves and rather well. There are reports that we should be very concerned here in 2020 about trouble surrounding the Republican convention 2 years from now. And there were reports that you should have been concerned 2 years ago in Cleveland. What happened there? Nothing, right?
Pretty much. I mean, there was there were protesters who were present. I can't remember the exact number of arrests. It was maybe 10 to 20 or somewhere in that department. And some people who were trying to burn an American flag ended up lighting themselves on fire. So that was kind of like the highlight, I guess, of the protests. But we actually, leading up to the convention, when it looked like the Republican National Committee might deny Donald Trump the nomination, Roger Stone, who's a political operative with a history of just kind of being bombastic, who's close to Donald Trump, started basically saying, you know, that he's going to create a Days of Rage campaign, and they're going to send people to the delegates' hotel rooms to tell them what they think about them were they to not vote for Donald Trump. So you really did have – there's a basis for a concern about things being really overheated. But between just kind of the widespread police presence, the fact that I think the protest numbers weren't quite what people were fearing, and then also just kind of good behavior, I guess, from everybody who was there, it turned out being okay.
Has anybody been able to quantify or measure the so-called intangible multiple benefits that come with hosting big events like political conventions. Can you say with any assurance what Cleveland has gotten out of having been the host?
Well, that's, you know, that's the thing about intangible benefits. You can't quantify them. But, you know, I'm a political reporter. I don't cover convention business here, so it's kind of fallen off my radar a little bit. But I think that, I mean, again, if you just kind of think about it from an intangible standpoint, if you're in Cleveland and your job is to try to attract conventions, it really helps you with basically the pitch that you're going to make and say, hey, I think that we can handle the National Actuarial Convention, because we did the Republican National Convention, and that was pretty much as crazy as it gets. So, you know, so I can't say that there's been X percent number of increase of conventions that we've hosted or whatever, but you know, if you think about it, I think it was beneficial. But again, it does help to kind of try to keep your expectations in check when it comes to this kind of stuff.
In the afterglow of the Cleveland convention, Russ Mitchell, one of your local news anchors there, said that the attitude of Cleveland was, quote, "What can we do for you?" While the attitude at the Democratic convention in Philadelphia that same year was, "What do you want?" And no. It's very funny. Cleveland, he said, was hungrier. Your city hadn't hosted a political convention since 1936 and was hungry. That describes us to a point, I think, here in Charlotte. We love things like this. Is that the key? Don't be jaded and aim to please.
Yeah, I do think that if you kind of walked around Cleveland that week, everybody was really kind of excited. They thought it was fun that we had all of this attention. I remember I live pretty close to downtown Cleveland, and I went for a run right before the convention was being set up just to go check it out. So I ran downtown and accidentally wandered into a live shot for one of the Sunday shows on Sunday morning. So it was just cool. And I think that, you know, in the city, even though a lot of people might have had political beliefs that sort of put them at odds with what was actually going on, just kind of the spectacle of the whole thing was interesting and different, and I think that people bought into the idea of making sure that the event went well to help put us on a kind of a good footing on the national stage.
Is the feeling that Cleveland would be open to hosting another political convention?
Well, it's funny. After the day after the event, the mayor here kind of had a press conference basically debriefing everyone, and all the national reporters had been camped out there, you know, for weeks, had finally basically gone to Philadelphia. And so it was just basically us local reporters who were left. And so we said, hey, what's next? How about the 2020 Republican National Convention? They're like, I don't think so. So
why?
Once you kind of reach the pinnacle, I mean, I guess what do you do next?
So you didn't bid on this? No, we are.
I think we're hosting the MLB All-Star Game next year, and I think that's probably good enough for us for now.
Okay, Andrew Tobias, political reporter with the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Thanks for sharing your thoughts. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. We're here in our studio with Sarah Reedy Jones, who's the vice chair of the Mecklenburg County Republican Party, Dockery Clark, former chief of staff of the 2012 Democratic National Convention Host Committee, and Bob Morgan, president and CEO of the Charlotte Chamber. They say that fewer people attend Republican conventions than attend Democratic conventions. Do you think that's true?
Well, there's a reality that there's a delegate allotment, so that's why the numbers are different.
Okay, so I think 48,000 people went to the convention in Cleveland. How many people do you expect to come to Charlotte? From the party, not the media.
That number typically stays around the same. The delegate allotment doesn't typically change over the years.
So you have to raise $70 million, and that $70 million actually has a cushion built in. I think the real figure is $63.6 million, and Republicans are money people, so they like to build in contingencies.
Absolutely.
Which you've done. The 2012 Democratic Host Committee had to only raise $42 million. Is that figure right?
Right.
And it still fell short, in part because President Obama put limits on how that money could be raised. I think it was personal donations were capped at $100,000, and he banned all corporate donations, which made it very difficult to raise money. And I think, what was there, an $8,000 loan, $8 million loan, $6 million of which was not paid back, right?
Well, I have to go back and pull the cobwebs off to think about the actual numbers, but they were guaranteed by our great corporate partner here, Duke Energy, from their shareholders. And so we were able to close the gap on what we needed to make sure everybody was paid. Now, we also were able to raise some additional funds outside of the official convention funds that allowed us to execute the ancillary events and all the activities that we wanted to host and showcase as our community. Our theme that year was We Make It Possible, so we wanted to showcase that we were a community of possibilities, and I absolutely expect Charlotte to do the same thing right. as we go through here.
And John Lasseter, although he's built in this contingency fund, does not have any backup plan. I mean, if you don't raise the $63.6 million or the $70 million, you don't have a backup plan. Is that right?
I'm confident with the host committee. So, yeah.
But are you confident with the host committee, given the fact that this has been a turbulent 2 years? I don't think anybody can argue with that, whether you are a fan of President Trump or you're not. It's been a turbulent 2 years, and he does antagonize a lot of people, I think by design. That's part of his negotiating strategy. So if they had trouble in Cleveland with corporate donors, will you have trouble here?
I don't think so. I think that you're going to have an untested candidate, and now you have a president and you have policies that you can support.
Okay. Democratic City Councilman James Mitchell, who voted yes on bringing the Republican convention to town, hopes that when vendors are hired leading up to this convention, that at least 30% of them will be from the local area. Is that what happened in 2012 for the Democrats?
I think 30% is the number of local. 47% was actually the diversity spend as well.
Okay.
Of everything that got.
Because the Charlotte Business Journal describes that 30% figure as an ambitious goal. Why would that be ambitious? I mean, if you're going to get flowers and food and risers and folding chairs, and why wouldn't that come from local vendors? Why would it come from some other city? Nobody has answers to these questions, do they? You have a lot to learn, don't you?
I am a grassroots volunteer that is now needing to get 4,999 other grassroots volunteers involved.
Not that you want to help the Republicans.
Well, I'll help in any way I can.
But what would you tell the host committee, the Republican host committee, about the pitfalls of all this? What sticks in your mind as something they need to know about now?
Well, one of the things I'm most proud about is that clearly there's already conversations going on between Dr. Dan Murray, who headed up the Democratic effort in 2012, and John Lasseter. So they're already talking. I'm always surprised at how little intellectual property there is that passes from Cleveland to Charlotte. There are different people who organize from the party effort, and at least Charlotte is talking, and we're sharing right. information. But make sure that you stick to what you want to accomplish and accomplish those goals.
And Mike, another competitive advantage for Charlotte and North Carolina, we are a right-to-work state, low rate of unionization. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the business of running large events, Charlotte's a lot easier in which to do business than in many other cities where unions make the business of running a convention more difficult.
People who don't know about unions and how they interface with these big events don't understand simple things like if you want to plug in a lamp, which anybody can do because you've done it your whole life, you have to call the union to do it. In many of these venues.
It can be quite cumbersome, and again, it's a competitive advantage for Charlotte that we don't have a strong presence of the unions in the convention
there
business.
There were concerns prior to 2012. We kind of talked about this a little bit already, about security and about potential disturbances. Some are more concerned about this convention. Given what Charlotte went through in the aftermath of the Keith Scott shooting and all of the television coverage that disturbances in the streets got Charlotte, does that concern you about attracting future business, future conventions, tourists, etc., if something like that were to happen during the Republican convention? Because some people have said this has the chance of being not unlike the 1968 Democratic convention in Chicago.
Mike, there's a level of divisiveness in our country today that is unfortunate. It was in the room when city council debated this a couple of Mondays ago, and I observed that it's unfortunate the divisiveness that does exist. Having said that, that's a reality, whether the convention is in Charlotte or anywhere else. I have complete confidence in Chief Putney, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department, to work together with state and federal agencies. I think we're going to see more of that divisiveness in the streets than we saw in 2012. But again, have confidence in the police department's ability to manage that and to protect the public.
So I have about 30 seconds left, and Billy emails, how does one volunteer for the Republican National Convention? convention. What's the vetting process? Where do you start?
Very simple. Just go to mecgop.com, and there's a volunteer form. Just go ahead and fill that out. And we have some elections to run right now, but we'll get back to you, and we will have answers for you. But go to mecgop.com.
And we'll put that on our website at wfae.org. Thanks to Sarah Reedy Jones, vice chair of the Mecklenburg County Republican Party, who barely has enough time to sit here with so much work she has to get done. Dockery Clark is former chief of staff of the 2012 Democratic National Host Committee. Bob Morgan, president and CEO of the Charlotte Chamber. And he had to leave early, but he was here. Tom Murray, CEO of CRVA. Thank you all for the hour. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.